Prelude. Jakku, 3 decades ago. The boy runs. His footsteps echo across the hard, unforgiving ground. His feet have no shoes. They are wrapped in ratty bindings, the same bindings Mirza Topal uses to mend the wounds of those miners and scavengers who come to the anchorite nurse for succor. As such, the ground is rough beneath him. It bites through the thin cloth. It abrades. But he does not bleed, because his feet are tough, even if many think him weak. Clouds of dust kick up with every step. Scree hisses across rock. The boy is chasing something. A pair of streaking contrails bisecting the dead sky. It comes from a ship that flew overhead. A strange ship, like he had never seen. It gleamed black, clean, like shined polished glass. He was out scrubbing solar arrays when he saw it pass overhead. One of the other orphan boys, Brev, said,
"Look at the pretty ship, Gally."
Narwhal, the girl with one dead eye, drew back her cracked and bleeding lips, responding with,
"It won't stay pretty for long. Nothing stays pretty here."
That, she says with some authority. The boy had to see. He had to see the pretty ship before Jakku ruined it. Before the stone wind scoured its hull. Before the sun baked off its color. Anchorite Kolob told him to stay behind, finish his chores. But the boy would have none of that. He was compelled, as if by destiny. He ran, for one click, then another, until his legs ached so hard they felt like clumps of cured dried meat hanging from his hips. But now, here he is, atop the plaintive hand plateau, an outcropping of bent flat rock that the anchorites say is a holy place, a place the consecrated Eremite considered home thousands of years before, when Jakku was supposedly a verdant living place. Out there, down in the valley, he spies the ship. Sun trapped in its perfect steel, the bright and blinding bands stark, even in the light of day. He thinks, "I could stop here." In fact, he should stop here. The boy knows he should turn tail and go home, back to the habit house, back to his work, and his contemplations, and to the other orphans. And yet, he remains compelled, as if something invisible is tugging him along, an unseen thread bound to his throat, leading him like a leash and collar.
"I will get a little closer. I won't be missed."
The boy creeps down the narrow switchback path leading into the valley. At the bottom, all that separates him from the ship are dozens of rocky outcroppings, spires of crooked red stone jutting up out of the sand like broken, bloody teeth. He moves from stone to stone, hiding behind each, trying to stay silent. Silent like the skitter mice that cross the desert when night falls and the ground cools. The ship roams into view. This is a ship that does not belong here. A dark mirror, long and lean, with swept-back wings and crimson windows. It sits as silent and as patient as a perching raptor, like the vicious Vorka, the birds that swoop and eat the little skitter mice. The boy scurries from stone to stone until he is close. Close enough to smell the ozone coming off it. Close enough to feel the warmth of the sun radiating from its hull. A heat haze rises above it, warping the air. Nothing moves. No sound comes from inside.
"I have seen enough. I should go."
The boy remains rooted, despite this thought. Finally, a shudder and a hiss. A ramp descends from the ship's smooth underbelly. Vapor gases off into the heated air. A figure eases down the ramp. The boy almost laughs. This someone must certainly be lost, given the way that he is dressed. A long purple cloak drags behind him. A tall hat sits poised upon the man's head. Then the boy thinks, some of the anchorites wear heavy robes like this, don't they? They say it tests them. It is sacred to learn how to withstand the heat. It is necessary, they say, to shun pain and learn to live beyond its margins. Maybe this man is an anchorite. Though the anchorites avoid pretty precious things, don't they? No material entanglements, they say. This ship, the boy believes, certainly qualifies as a material entanglement. As do the droids that follow swiftly thereafter. 6 of them. Each upright on legs shining like black, sun-blasted glass. Antennas rise from insectile heads, and the man in the purple robe waves them on without a word. Mouthpieces vocalize a series of tones and clicks just before they step out onto the hard, sand-scoured rock. The boy watches as they place down black boxes. Boxes that connect to one another with beams of green light. Beams bright enough to see even in the day. Beams that connect to one another and form a kind of frame. The man eases slowly down the ramp, his cloak whispering against the metal like sand blown across sheets of tin.
This is it. This is the space. Mark it and begin excavation. I will return.
One of the droids says,
Yes, Advisor Tashu.
There is a moment when the boy realizes that an opportunity has presented itself. He hates this world. He does not belong here. As the man in the purple robe returns up the ramp, he thinks,
This is my chance. My chance to leave this place and never return.
For a moment he is frozen, paralyzed by indecision, affixed by the fear of uncertainty. He has no idea where the ship will go, or who that man is, or what they will do if they find him. But he knows this place is dead. The ramp begins to rise, and the boy, Galley, thinks,
I must hurry!
And hurry he does. Fast and quiet, like the skitter mice, he bounds across the sand in his bare feet and catches the lip of the ramp as it closes. Galley tucks his body up and in, crawling into the dark moments before the ship begins to take off.